But now as he goes on talking about the women, in verse 11, he says, let the woman learn in silence with all subjection. Let her learn in silence with all subjection. He's talking about the assembly of the church here is what he's really talking about. Back in verse 8, he says, I will that men pray everywhere, lifting up holy hands without wrath and doubting. Talking about how men are to pray. And then he says, in like manner also that women adorn themselves. So this is still talking about the attitude that men and women have in the worship service. And so now in verse 11, let the women learn in silence with all subjection. As we're talking about the duties of women, and in particular the duties of wives, here again we want to show that this applies. But I suffer not a woman to teach, nor to use her authority over the man, but to be in silence. Now there are groups that take that verse and twist it around so that it doesn't say what it says. So that it doesn't mean what it says. But it's very simple. You don't have to do any resting or twisting of the scriptures to see what this is saying here. He says, I suffer not a woman to teach, nor usurp authority over the man, but to be in silence. And there's two things then that a woman is not to do. One is, in this church situation where they're assembled, she's not to teach. And number two is, she is not to usurp authority over the man, but she is to be in what he calls silence. Silence. Now, there are some who've taken that word silence and they've retranslated it to mean quietness. That they are to do it with quietness. But still, it all comes out the same meaning. It doesn't change anything at all. It simply designates and denotes the position of the woman in the church in relation to the man in the church. We're talking about in the worship service now. And Adam, for Adam was first formed, then Eve. And Adam was not deceived, but the woman being deceived was in the transgression. Now why he brings this in, why he relates this in this particular passage, I can't give a good answer for. Whether he's showing that woman is inherently weak, or whether he's showing that this is one of the curses that was placed upon Eve, and it has been handed down to all women ever since Eve, I can't give a good answer for it. But he simply says, for Adam was first formed and then Eve, and Adam was not deceived, but the woman being deceived was in the transgression. Notwithstanding, that is, in view of the fact, even though she was not the first formed, and even though she was the one that was first deceived, and even though she was the one in transgression, notwithstanding, she shall be saved in childbearing if they continue in faith and charity and holiness with sobriety. So here again, Paul puts in this idea that one of her functions is to do with the children. She is to have as one of her prime motivations and goals in life, children. And he just words it like this, she shall be saved in childbearing. Of course, ultimately to have children, somebody has to bear children. If they, now then childbearing alone is not going to do it though. If they continue in faith, that is, sound belief and practices regarding God, and charity, which has to do with love, and we know that love is one of the most basic things in all of Christianity, and holiness, this is, she is godlike, she is holy, she is something that is free from impurities, with sobriety, that is, with a sober, sound mind. With sobriety. Now he really lays it out here in a very straight manner. She has a chance of being saved. But he says it has to do with childbearing if she continues in faith and charity and holiness with sobriety. So we're still talking about the duties now of women. And we had many things to say about the duties of men, and we're not wanting to just put all of our stress on women, but we certainly want to put enough stress that we can say that we've rounded out this body of knowledge. Well, the next scripture is 1 Timothy 3 and 11. Here he's talking about the officers of the church, the bishops, And then he talks about the deacons. And in talking about the deacon, he says, and let these also first be proved, then let them use the office of a deacon, being found blameless. Even so must their wives, and this would certainly be the wives of the deacons, and in all probability it's the wives of the elders and bishops too, even so must their wives be grave, not slanderers, sober, faithful in all things. Now here we learn another very great principle of marriage. And that is that whatever level one of the marriage partners is on, the other one will naturally gravitate to that level. They're going to be just about equals. You can't be unequal and be married. Not in maintain the marriage state as it should be. Either one's going to come down to the level of the other, or the other's going to come up to the level of one. So in this thing of one of the offices and gifts of the church, the bishops and the deacons, he indicates here very strongly that their wives will be one of the determining factors as to whether or not they'd be qualified. The wife could disqualify the husband by the kind of a person and by the kind of a life that she lives. So it says, even so must their wives be. Now, he's teaching here very plainly that if the wife fails to be what he names, then this would disqualify. He said, even so must their wives be. He didn't say it would be a good thing for the wives to be, but must their wives be. How? Number one is grave. And that word grave means serious. She must be serious. Now, serious, of course, includes a lot of things. But it would mean to me that she is very, very earnest in this business of living a Christian life. She's serious about it. She doesn't take it lightly. She's able to be concerned, and she is not frivolous and flighty and somebody who just takes everything real lightly and doesn't ever think it through and give any serious consideration to what's happening. Serious. Not slanderers. He puts that in there again. Not slanderers. That's about what he said a while ago about being idle and being a tattler and being a busybody and wandering about from house to house, speaking things which they ought not. Here he says, not slanderers. Now, if we stop and think about it for a moment, these persons who were bishops and deacons, they were in a position to maybe know about some real serious personal problems of other members of the church. Here a person might have a grave problem. They might have been guilty of some sin that would really be a slander on them. And so the bishop or the deacon finds out about it. And they do it in such a way that they're trying to help this person. And the wife finds out about it. Well, just think of all the damage that could be done by the knowledge that that wife has. He says, not slanderers. You cannot slander anybody. And this wife then of the bishop, or the wife of the deacon, would disqualify him if she were guilty of slandering. Sober. Here again, this has to do with soundness of mind. And he says, faithful in all things. And this should certainly give the husband and the wife both a close picture as to how closely interrelated they are in everything that they do. And in particular, the church. If the wife could affect the qualities of the husband as a deacon or as a bishop, then necessarily she can affect the qualities of the husband in whatever duty he may perform in the church. The wife can be a serious factor in it, for the good or for the bad. And so, if you're going to dwell with her according to knowledge, then this is certainly part of the knowledge that you should have. And the wife should have it also. And when you're in the position of choosing a mate, choosing a husband, or choosing a wife, This should be a part of your knowledge. You're going to be what that person is, whether you like it or not. Or that person is going to be what you are, whether they like it or not. One of you's got to change for the better, or the other is going to change for the worse. And that's a principle that's laid down. And of course, all of the sociologists and people of that nature know this principle anyway. You stay on the same level. You just cannot be one in a high level, one in a low level, and be married. You come to the same level. Whatever level that is, the two of you have to determine what it's going to be. And so dwell with them according to knowledge. This is a part of that knowledge. We're going to close at that point for this morning, although we still haven't quite finished all of the duties of wives, and we then, Lord willing, will continue that next time.